A strange spiralling white light was spotted in the early morning sky over Sydney, with even sceptical witnesses wondering if it was a UFO.
They were last seen on the beach with a tall man, and that's the best description police have ever had of him.
More than 17 years after Harold Holt disappeared into raging surf at Cheviot Beach, his widow has finally revealed his last romantic words.
Shocking, terrifying, mesmerising. That's the way a number of Australians have described their alleged encounter with the Yowie.
It's time for the Weird Crap in Australia podcast.
Welcome to the Weird Crap in Australia podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Soule. This is episode 158. And of course, I am joined, as always, with researcher extraordinaire herself, my lovely wife, Holly Soule.
This episode's a little bit tricky in that it makes you think one thing, but in reality, it's something else.
Yes, it's a lot of sleight of hand, this particular story. We are going to delve into the life of one Abbott, not Tony Abbott, Holly.
No.
But blanking on the first name here. You need to help me out. See, this is, you need interpretive co-host people. So when you're pointing and you're sort of like, help me, help me, help me, help me, you want to hope that they will be able to do that. That is, of course, is not what happened in this situation. But that gives you a little behind the scenes on how to pick a co-host.
His name is Brendan Abbott.
Thank you, Holly.
If you'd shut up like 5 seconds earlier. But no, it's okay. It's all good. My bad.
At any rate, we're going to be talking about Brendan Abbott, aka the Postcard Bandit. Of course, that name itself is very much tied into the urban legend. And of course, that urban legend is full of a lot of inaccuracies. So we're going to pull this story completely apart. But this is an interesting figure because Mr. Abbott is very close to with the sort of bush ranger that we all know and love from the earlier eras of Australian history. However, there is a big difference between early colonial Australian life and modern day life in how well received criminals are. But we're going to get into that as we discuss the entire life of Mr. Bradley Abbott.
Brendan Abbott.
Oh, fuck's sake. Brendan Abbott.
It's at the bottom of the second paragraph. The Australian tradition of bushranging, itself evolving from the stagecoach robberies of the Wild West, never really left the scene. It just kind of evolved. From the era of Ben Hall, Ned Kelly, and Matthew Brady, through to the modern era of the Flemington crew, bushrangers simply lowered their sights from the almost impenetrable armour guard bands to the banks themselves. This continuing attitude of robbery for thrill and sustaining oneself could find no better example than that of Brendan Abbott. Now, Abbott was born May 8, 1962, becoming a ward of Western Australia.
Basically, that meant he was orphaned. Not orphaned, but
he wasn't orphaned.
Handed off to the authorities.
Fostered out.
We're just going to hand him out.
His hearing was impaired, which led to him being picked on and maltreated while living at the Hilston Boys' Home.
You know, Lou Ferrigno was in the same position when he was little.
And then he turned into the Hulk and they all got scared of him.
He was the only man to actually physically play the Incredible Hulk. But he had a hearing condition. They used to make fun of him. So he started lifting those weights.
And one day he just lifted them.
Pretty much.
Abbott attended high school at Mount Helena, Western Australia, where he was considered an okay student. He wasn't the best, but he wasn't going to drop out anytime soon.
It's all right. I was considered an illiterate idiot who would never be able to achieve anything.
And now you work in podcasts, so you kind of proved him right?
No.
Ostracised from his peers due to his hearing difficulties and middling at school, Abbott worked on his skills, learning how to build disguises, using computers to create fake IDs, which was no mean feat in 1980s Australia.
Yeah, 1980s computers.
Slightly more advanced than Return of the Jedi.
I'm just trying to think of what kind of computer you could get that would actually, I mean, I would imagine that most computers in an office setting are still using like the DDoS software. Like,
DOS, I think, was 95, 96, because I remember my mum playing on a DOS machine. There
was Windows 93, 95, and then Windows ME, then XP.
Vista and XP.
Yeah, so I think, Windows definitely would have been on the scene yet. So probably playing around with Commodores.
Yeah, Apple.
Commodore computers. Yeah, maybe an Apple.
He also worked on his powers of observation. These skills would be utilised in one of the most daring bank robbery sprees Australia had seen since the days of Ned Kelly. Unlike most criminal activity, those undertaking efforts that require a large degree of planning, such as assassinations or bank heists, tend to draw more intelligent people. If only for the fact that dumber ones get caught after the first or second try. Let me finish the sentence.
When it comes to assassins, I don't think there's any such real thing as assassins.
Not anymore, no.
Well, I mean, you hear every now and again about an undercover cop being hired to be a assassin, which just says to me that people who are playing around in that are pretty stupid.
But again, that's the dumb ones that get caught the first or second time.
Well, recently there was
confirmation bias.
I can't remember which specific country it was in. But one guy hired an assassin to kill his wife, who hired an assassin, who hired an assassin, who hired an assassin, who also hired an assassin.
It's like the woman.
It's like five assassins.
It's like the woman who hired an assassin to countermand the guy who hired the assassin to assassin her.
Yeah, it's weird. It's just weird.
It's just like some people drawing cards.
It's so stupid. Actually, I've probably talked about it on the podcast before, but an ex-acquaintance of mine, their partner got themselves involved in a little assassination gig. And guess what happened? Just like with most people who seek out an assassin, they spoke to an undercover police officer and went to jail for about 5 years.
Bomb making is also considered a high IQ crime, but only on behalf of those actually making the bomb, not the ones who are setting it off. So people like Craig Minogue are considered more intelligent than people like, say, Stanley Taylor, who was working with him.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you think about when it comes to bombing crime, I mean, America's Unabomber case is probably the world's most famous. And
our own family court bombing.
The family court bombing as well is a really good example of two people that managed to evade police for quite some time.
Decade.
Like, I think the Unabomber was able to operate for at least two decades. And of course, the family court bomber was able to run around being free.
Since the 80s.
Yeah, you know, for 40 odd years. Both dangerously intelligent people.
Mm-hmm. Bank heists tend to take more intelligence for several reasons, the least of which being interpreting and sorting information to assist in carrying it out. Details on processes and schedules, tech, and other such information, which the average convenience store robber really doesn't give a shit about.
Yeah, so a convenience store robbery or a supermarket robbery, for example, it's go in, intimidate, quick cash, get out. It's get in, move, get everything done. They know they're only going to get money out of like registers.
They're only going to get less than a grand.
Yeah, they're maybe going to walk out, you know, after a good day, and they can get to enough tellers, you know, maybe $4,000 or $5,000, if that, right? So it's quick cash. It's the same with smash and grabs, you know, when they'll torpedo a stolen vehicle through a store, grab whatever they can, and then get the hell out of there. So that's instantaneous quick robbery. Now, banking heists can be done in one or two ways. Scare the absolute fuck out of people, but in that case, you have to have the intimidation factor. You have to hope that they don't get to the security features quick enough, and you got to have a getaway car.
I've watched someone who fucked that up. They went in, they tried to intimidate, the security screens went up, and he didn't realize that it locked the door behind him, so he was like banging, banging, trying to get out.
He got caught.
And then he just kind of casually walks around the room with his hands in his pockets, like, dude, you're the only guy there.
He unfortunately, he wasn't getting away. Other bank robberies can take planning and
Ocean's
consideration.
11.
And your Ocean's 11. That's why it doesn't really happen anymore, because banks are very difficult to rob.
Just like your mass murderers nowadays, it's got to be quick and it's got to be hard and you got to do it in one go.
Yeah, yeah.
In 1986, Abbott fled from police questioning at Nalumara Police Station in relation to a burglary and used his small-time skills to evade police. In 1987, he stole $11,200 from the Commonwealth Bank in Perth, which translates to $28,000 this year, on his first attempt at a bank robbery. Now, he says that's his first attempt. If he actually managed to get away with it, I doubt it was his first go. He managed to get away, but within a few months, he was arrested at Perth Airport.
Yeah. So, why did Abbott go from below average kid to bank robber?
Because he was bored, I guess. I honestly don't know. I couldn't find any information in those intervening years. Matthew, you look like you have an idea.
I wonder if it had to do with, I mean, being ostracized from society in general.
Getting lots of money and buying friends kind of thing, you think?
Fuck no. That is exactly not what I was saying. Do you know what ostracize means, right?
Yeah, it means that people will ignore you, but some people think that if you get lots of money, people will love you.
No, what the point I'm trying to get here is someone who's already isolated from society is not going to act appropriately within society. So, you know, the education system has essentially told him he's too average or too dumb to progress forward. He's already, he's showing aptitude in things like computer science, and he's learning that he can use this technology that he understands to create fake IDs and to start scamming systems. It's almost like, you know how there's the serial killer soup, you know, it's like bad parents and penchant for harming animals and all that sort of stuff. I kind of feel that for individuals like Abbott, there's a sort of an anti-social, anti-society soup, you know, and it's being a little bit different and being attacked for being different and not having any societal safety nets to catch you, but also understanding enough about society that you can manipulate it. And because society has turned its back on you, that's exactly what you do. Just a theory, but it kind of fits a lot of these sort of people.
I'd also like to point out the way you started that speech made me think that if he was wandering around doing this at this era, he'd actually probably be a really good makeup artist on a movie because he has the ability to do all those disguises and he can manipulate computers beyond the scope of the era. But that's me. Anyway, we'll move on.
Just trying to work out why you'd need a computer if you're a visual effects
What, you think artist. People don't 3D print with a computer?
Prosthetics
and stuff.
What are you 3D printing?
Prosthetics.
This example is as it.
I don't
it's
know much about I don't know what movies. To say. Okay, I just watched them.
It's all good. I just thought that there was like
we'll have
some
to
sort
ask
of
Miss Lucy. She would know.
Yeah, she would. I just thought there was some sort of like wisdom or something you were going to impart.
That was my wisdom.
Okay. The Australian way, just bullshit. I know one picks up on it. Until some asshole like me like puts a hand up and like, I'd like actually, to know more. What's below the surface of your answer?
Abbott was sentenced to serve his time at Fremantle Prison, which was still operating from the age of convicts. He ended up taking duties as a tailor in the men's uniform shop. Now, while working in the shop, he and his friend Aaron Reynolds constructed fake prison guard uniforms and hid them away.
Again, it really speaks to his intelligence. Like, it's obviously the school system did not appreciate that they actually had a gifted student on their hands. Mm-hmm. It happens all the time.
School is for like this narrow road, and then there's this whole wide spectrum off both sides that no one ever looks at school.
Yeah, well, I went to a, you know, it was an okay high school. Like, it actually sounded like I had a better education in the country than you did in the city, which still surprises me. But we had, you know, there was about 600 of us in the entirety of the high school. And I remember a guy in my year was extremely mathematically gifted, like extremely gifted. But they just couldn't keep his attention. And he turned to a life of petty crime and destroyed his life before it even got started. But
that might actually be what happened here. He's like, all right, I'm an idiot. Well, I'm going to prove I'm not. That's
what I'm kind of, I don't know if it's so much I'm going to prove I'm not. It's like, it's rejecting society that rejects you. You know, it's like using it and manipulating it and not being a part of it because it rejected you.
Okay. On January 4, 1988, the prisoners at Fremantle instigated a prison riot as a cover for a mass prison escape. The prisoners were sick of the conditions of the prison, exacerbated by a heatwave that turned the cells into ovens and saunas.
Remember how Australia is hot as shit? You don't want to be in a convict-era prison in the middle of an Australian summer.
Convicts didn't want to fucking do it, and now modern prisoners really don't want to fucking do it. Now, these prisoners were also forced to remain outside in the sun-drenched yard to ease off their tensions, which would do exactly the fucking opposite. Abbott and 11 other men were implicated in the escape, as in the 2 weeks before the riot, they managed to collect 3 litres of fuel from lawnmowers, concealing it in their drink bottles. Those 12 people were later charged for their roles in the riot, which caused almost $2 million damage and unintentionally actually managed to block the escape attempt.
So Abbott and his buddies who were looking to escape, they orchestrate a riot and then make sure that they've got enough lawnmower fuel to set up Molotov cocktails. And
they were going to set the building on fire. I don't know how you do that in a sandstone building, but, you know, they were going to do that.
I mean, anything is worth a shot. You know, you're trying to escape prison. Again, we see scheming. We see intelligence. The system keeps kind of encouraging him to be better.
Innovate more.
Yeah, innovate. Be a better criminal.
On November 24, 1989, Reynolds and Abbott, as well as an unknown third prisoner, put on the guards' uniforms they'd made, cut through the bars in the workshop, and entered the guards' walkway. Once there, they made their way across the rooftops and off the prison grounds. While Abbott and Reynolds managed the jump across, the third prisoner managed to drop and broke his leg, relegating him just to the footnotes of history.
There's always one in every prison escape, someone who doesn't quite
the red shirt.
Yeah, the red shirt. Someone who's always going to take a fall for the rest of the group.
The only mention I found of him looking through all the newspaper clippings and everything was on the Fremantle Prison website itself.
Oh, okay.
So that poor dude has been so lost to history, there's one mention of him breaking his leg. Reynolds and Abbott managed to vanish into the wilderness, supposedly without a trace. Reynolds was caught 7 weeks later, appearing before the East Perth Court of Petty Sessions on January 12, 1990. He was not happy to be there and made sure everyone knew it.
Reynolds yelled, "You all suck!" before hurling the chair 5 metres across the courtroom while handcuffed to a police officer. He was then dragged screaming to the lockup as the court emergency alarm sounded.
The only way that could be more Australian is if you yelled, "Fuck you!"
That comes to us via Canberra Times.
Abbott, on the other hand, had vanished into thin air. Not to say the police found no trace of him, but even with a series of clues, Abbott still managed to avoid arrest for a lot longer than Reynolds.
He bankrolled his freedom by committing a string of bank robberies, using his considerable guile and ingenuity to create convincing disguises and manufacture false identification documents and self-taught electronic skills to defeat often complex bank alarm systems.
1980 still doesn't have shit on 2020, so don't go out and try this today.
I mean, now, yeah, like I said, I almost wonder, though, if we're going to go back to that era of easy criminality, because all of our systems are slowly changing to be automated. You know, they're working on self-driving cars. We're using self-serve checkouts and all of these things are networked. You know, they're all connected to the internet. All it's really going to take is a kid just like Abbott to learn the necessary skills in order to, you know, you won't need to know how to unlock a car. You'll just need to know how to hack a car from a laptop. You know what I mean?
Like, get it off the system and suddenly it's free ride.
Yeah, yeah. We almost go back to, because we're going to be entering a brand new frontier, we don't know how to safeguard and protect that frontier from opportunistic people like Abbott. So, like I said, I wonder if we're going to see, you know, what does a petty criminal look like in the future? Well, they're definitely carrying around, you know,
it's the 8-year-old with an iPad.
Yeah, or, you know, an $800 laptop in the backpack. That's that new era of criminal. And, you know, if you've got a brand new self-driving car from Lamborghini, and I think Lambo just announced their first 3 new electric
cars. I can't afford it, so it makes me sad anyway.
Yes, I know you're a fan. We'll get you one day. You know, they've announced that they're going self-driving, that they're going electric. Now,
that makes me wince, actually.
you want to get your hands on that car. Well, you just override its internal locks. Like, you know, you don't need a key. You just need
click.
And all of these companies always have shortfalls when it comes to their software. You know, just something to think about. If Abbott grew up now, that is probably what he would have been doing.
Yeah.
Using drones to scope out the banks, hacking into their systems. Like, this is that sort of guy.
Abbott set off on a backpacking trip around Australia, robbing banks as he went and enjoying the high life. Rivalry between the states made it almost impossible for the police forces to share information, and so Abbott was basically left to do his thing.
Much like the entirety of law enforcement in the Western world, mm-hmm. around this era, policing, and this was in the UK, this is in Canada, this is America, this is Australia, they've broken up along state lines to such an extent that they will actually let crimes happen in other states.
Just they'll drive to the border and then drive away.
Just so they don't lose that collar. Like, they want to catch the criminal,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you know criminals going into New South Wales, well, you're not going to tell New South Wales police, because South Australian police, you really want that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or actually, can you connect
yes,
to South?
You can.
Yes, Broken Hill?
No. Yes. Yes, over Broken Hill, yes.
You know, it's things like that. Like, they don't want to miss their criminal. They don't want to miss their arrest, and they don't want to help their neighbor. And this was happening all around the Western world. It's why so many serial killers escaped. It was why so many bank robbers escaped, and you know, extremist groups managed to skirt the law so often.
The reason the bigger killers managed to cross state lines and not get caught until they gave themselves away.
Yeah, but at least those two sides of those two police organizations
eventually
talked
to each other. Yeah. Western Australian police, irritated by his crossing the border, didn't actually bother to issue a warrant for his arrest for almost 5 years after he escaped Fremantle.
Yeah, fuck it. You're over in someone else's state now. I don't give a shit.
You stop robbing us. Fine, go fuck
Jesus,
off to Darwin.
That's kind of the most Australian thing I've ever read.
On his trek around Australia, Abbott gained the nickname the Drop-In Bandit, because he would enter via the roof in some of his heists to hold the tellers at gunpoint. Now, this is not as catchy as the Postcard Bandit, so it's no wonder he actually lost that title.
It's interesting to... It's all roof stuff around the 80s, isn't it? Because if you think about the Woolworths bombings that we covered in episode...
99. One of those.
They were dropping bombs in via manholes.
Yep.
You know, it just... Yeah, the roofs just didn't seem to be a priority for organizations.
Well,
you
got cops walking around the front. They ain't sitting on the roof having a smoke. So.
Yeah, I guess so. So you just drop it in through the roof.
Now, while Abbott was on the run, his series of robberies continued. He robbed the Westpac at Tungan, as well as Westpac Broadbeach on December 16, 1994, the Commonwealth Bank at Palm Beach on February 1, 1993, Commonwealth Bank at Coolangatta on Christmas Eve 1992, and the National Australia Bank at Springwood in April 1992.
Oh, robbing a Commonwealth Bank on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. I bet you walked out with
he would have
quite
taken
a
all
substantial
the takings.
Amount of money.
Oh, yeah.
This is one thing that I would imagine that most people don't experience anymore.
Probably
or maybe,
not, no.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they still do. But when I first started working, because I'm old enough, well... Yeah, old enough to have been sort
analog
of,
era.
Yeah, analog and digital. So I have a foot in both, as do you, Holly. I used to do the cash run for the boss on the Friday afternoon. So,
thankfully, I didn't. I just helped him put it in a bag for him to fucking
do.
It was
all put in a bag, and I grabbed that bag, and I'd walk it down the middle of the street, like down the main street of Tumut.
And hope to God that no one was going to smack you.
Well, no one ever did. Like, you just didn't worry about it in a small town. You know, so I could only imagine then being 93 that he's robbing on Christmas Eve?
Commonwealth Bank was 92. Yeah,
92. I could only imagine that the bank would have to be just chockers with cash, because everyone would have finished early.
And Coolangatta is the Gold Coast, so people are up there partying like nothing.
Yeah, I would imagine that was a very, very full bank.
Yes.
And because everyone probably wanted to be gone, like, there would have been less people towards the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. These are just the robberies he was ended up being charged with. Abbott himself believes he robbed somewhere between 40 and 50 banks in his career, but he lost count. Oh, we have another quote here. This time it comes from the Gold Coast Bulletin.
"He was a real smart aleck," she said. "He didn't just come in and get the job done and leave. I can still see him with his feet up on my desk, waving a gun at my face. He kept reminding us how lucky we were that he wasn't on drugs and that he wasn't like normal robbers. He didn't try to hide himself either. He was just in normal clothes. He wasn't scared. This is how smart he was. He had it all planned out. He would have had to watch us go in and out and into that door for days beforehand because you couldn't tell that that door led to the bank. He jimmied the door, which was locked multiple times over, and surprised us from behind. It didn't click to me who he was straight away. I was just scared as soon as I saw the gun. But he was calm. He wasn't screaming. He'd done it before. You could see the experience in the way he acted. He had his victims wrapped around his fingers. And as a victim and someone who experienced the worst 20 minutes of my life with this man, I can say he does not deserve to be out. And that quote comes from Mrs. Mary Roderick.
She was one of the Coolangatta Commonwealth Bank employees at the time.
And she is, of course, one of the many people who stared down the barrel of a gun as the infamous bank robber tortured her with cold wit, waving a firearm in her direction with his feet up on the desk. Is that the
That's the quote, yeah.
That's the entire article title right there.
Yep.
Needed to be trimmed up a
little bit. Gold Coast woman tells a chilling encounter with Brendan Abbott, a.k.a. Postcard Bandit. So I just went, it's a Gold Coast Bulletin.
Oh, look, it'd be a terrifying experience. You know, you're going about your job and then someone busts in and they're waving guns and shit around. You know, we've had, like even in my workplace, we had a stabbing where I had to do first aid for a stabbing. We've had, of course, you know, numerous needles and things left out the front.
People just walking out with shit.
Yeah, we've got a little crime network that operates around. It's always scary. Like even for me, like I'm not a small person. I'm not easily intimidated. And I've been in situations where, you know, one person had managed to get past a door and down the steps in towards the staff room. And it was me and that person, you know, and you just, in those situations, like you do often think of yourself before other people and then you know, most of the time, at least in my case, you do the right thing and you're like, you know, no, you're not going any further and then you call for help. So
first time you see a knife though, most people step back and go, yeah, whatever you want, mate.
Oh, absolutely. And one thing I would say for anyone working in the retail space or any space and you encounter a robbery, give them what they want. Like, no, there is nothing to – like, no one will thank you if you stop a bank robber.
Well, the quote on the back of the door at our work is, no amount of money is worth a life.
No, and it's not. It really isn't, especially corporate money. They're insured.
Yeah, they'll get it back. Yeah, it's fine.
If you work for a business that gets robbed, they're insured. Don't worry about it.
Just hand it to them.
Yeah.
In 1991, 2 years after Abbott escaped, Fremantle Prison was decommissioned and shut down. Due to a twist of circumstances, Abbott actually remains the only prisoner to successfully escape Fremantle and never return.
After my escape, I was solely committed to avoiding capture and, you know, eventually flee the country, Abbott recalled in one of his many letters. I gave no thought to the fact that it would require me, like, totally cutting off ties with my family and my friends. You know, it's an impossible feat.
That came from news.com.au.
Yeah, it's Abbott himself.
In 1994, sensing the rising tide of incredulity from the public, the police managed to put aside their various forms of corruption and malice to work together to catch him.
Now, it's quite interesting here because there were members of the public that actually quite liked the adventures of the Postcard Bandit.
Mm-hmm.
However, we're now living in modern Australia, whereas, you know, 100 years before, Ned Kelly was lauded as a folk hero by most people.
Like most people who met him.
You know, and to the point where that folk story carried on into the modern era.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to see how when you start to incorporate, you know, a wealth structure, mm-hmm. like you have more middle class people at this point in Australian history than you do lower class people.
Yeah.
You know, there's more people in that middle to high income bracket.
Very thin measure of time where that was a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, 1980s was still part of that before there was also a big financial crash in the 80s too. So, you know, you've got that sort of going on and people are not as willing to embrace a folk hero criminal.
Is he stealing my money now?
Is he now taking my money? It's just interesting to see that shift when you do have that time span between Ned Kelly and someone like Abbott.
It was 110 years.
Yeah, because I think, you know, what would this look like today? Well, they would have a Twitter account and a TikTok account and a Facebook account, and they would let you know, you know, like, hey, just letting you know, the Twitter bandit You know, they tweet.
Just robbed Redfern Westpac or something like
that. Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, they have a phone running through a VPN and it's like, hey, just letting you know, Victorian police, I just robbed Barilat, bank today and I'll probably rob another one tomorrow. Anyway, see you later. And they'd refer to him as the Twitter bandit and that'd suck.
Abbott became Australia's most wanted man and the police forces pooled their resources in an effort to catch him. On March 26, 1995, Brendan Abbott's road of high living was over. He was found on the Gold Coast with guns, ammo and $76,000 that police knew was not his.
Why do you think he went to the extent of getting the firearms? Why?
He's a robber. He knows that other people are more than likely going to try and rob him.
Yeah, I suppose so. Like, it's interesting the way that there are two sides to the Brendan Abbott story. There's actually a very bad biopic that was made about him years ago.
Yes.
I actually thought the person playing him was Guy Pearce, but it wasn't. I just got confused with another actor. And in that they play hit, like the character is played as a sort of, you know, a roguish guy, very intelligent, likes to play this little game with the police back and forth. But that's not really what he was.
No, that movie that from 2003 is based on a book that was written by someone who was not Abbott.
Yeah, and it was a very romantic version of Abbott.
Very romanticized, yeah.
You know, because we'll go into this a little bit later on, but even the postcard nickname was incorrect.
But the only nickname he actually earned was the drop-in bandit.
Yeah.
That was the one that didn't stick.
Yeah, yeah.
Police recaptured him, but they knew they couldn't keep him contained forever.
Even when he was arrested and he went to court, you could see him in the court looking at areas that could be escape routes. Police officer Senior Sergeant Jeff Beeman told the ABC. And you always thought that Brendan was never going to be contained. He was like a caged animal. He was always just going to keep going.
During his freedom in the 1990s, media reported that Abbott was sending the West Australia Police postcards as a method of taunting them.
Yeah, so he gets arrested on the Gold Coast. Mm-hmm. Sent all the way back to Western Australia.
No. He remains on the Gold Coast.
So he remains on the Gold Coast.
He remains in Queensland, yeah. Yep. This is how he got the nickname the Postcard Bandit. However, this entire story was a police fabrication trying to drum up support against Abbott.
Yeah, so there must have been some sort of public relations back and forth here. But why did the police think, because I find that it's fabricated, right? But I find that very endearing. You know, if I'm reading the newspaper.
Endearing, like, on whose side? Well, Abbott's side or the police?
Abbott's side. It's like, oh, that's kind of
cute. That's exactly what the police didn't think.
Yeah, that's what, like, that seems to, I would be like, you know, every time he goes to a bank, he kills a puppy in front of it. Like, that's really going to upset people.
Yeah.
People are going to get really upset about that. But if the police turn around and say,
they keep sending me photos of him drinking a beer, staring out the throwing out the finger, they'd be like, yeah, go him.
Look, this bank robber. Little bit cheeky, right? Little bit cheeky. Sending us these lovely little postcards. Bit of cheek on him. We don't like that. Don't like people being cheeky. An everyday Australian's going to fucking love that. Like, that's funny as fuck.
Makes me giggle now.
Yeah, it does. Like, it's funny. So it's really odd that they fabricated that lie because, it makes him more charming and it makes him more of an outsider figure and it makes him someone that- It brings to mind Ned Kelly. But like I said, it's interesting that after 100 years of development in Australia, people don't love that figure as much as they would have.
The postcards the police were touting were just actually photos that Abbott lost on his escape from Fremantle in 1989. They were actually intended for his friends and family and were never actually sent to the police.
Abbott's nickname came about after an accomplice was caught with a roll of film the police subsequently developed. What they found were snaps of Abbott and his mate grinning in front of banks that they had robbed. Some even showed police at work over their shoulders. They were so annoyed they sent the pictures to the papers, hoping they would galvanise public reaction against the still-at-large Abbott. But if there's one thing the media knows and the police might forget, is that Aussies love their outlaws. The next day, the postcard bandit was born.
I really want to see some of those photos. I'm sure he's pulling a face while there's a cop behind him standing there with his fingers tucked in his belt.
Yep. I mean, I'll put it to you this way. If I was ever to develop a career as a master criminal, Holly, one of the first things that I would do would be working out some way to endear myself to the public while also pissing off the police at the same time.
So Instagram pictures of you giving police the finger and sticking your tongue out.
Or it'd be like, you know, like you'd grab a shipment of PlayStation 5s or Xbox Series X's.
Every time I rob a bank, I'm going to adopt a puppy.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be like, hey, just letting you know, the first one of these that I sell on Facebook Marketplace, I'm donating to the RSPCA. You know, just doing, just really fucking about with people like that. Or like, hey, just letting you know, this is the Twitter bandit and I just found a GoFundMe for a kid who has cancer and I've just funded it. You know, things-
I may have robbed a bank, but I'm Robin Hooding here, and he's now cured of cancer. Yeah. Thank you. You're welcome.
You know, just like heard what happened to walk past a homeless person today, just gave them $3,000, and you take a selfie with them. That's what I would do. And fuck, it would piss the police off. Because they, you know, they'd arrest you and it would be like, you know, hey, like,
I'm only doing good things.
There would be so much, like the sentence would be so minuscule because you would actually endear yourself to the public. Another thing, like you would pick your targets. So it's like you would rob the shit out of politicians.
Because Murdoch, I'm coming for you.
People would find it fucking funny.
Yep.
It's like, you know, any politician who would stand up and go, I was robbed the other night and I feel really bad about it. Most Australians would go, you fucking deserved it, you cockatoo. You know what I mean? So yeah, like his tactics could easily work in the modern era.
Once again, Abbott was sentenced to prison, this time at the Sir David Longland Prison in Queensland. He was charged with a number of robberies within the Queensland state, leaving his warrants in Western Australia outstanding. $5 million from these robberies has never actually been recovered, so get your shovels out and let's go digging.
In an unprecedented step, Abbott was confined to effective permanent solitary confinement throughout the ensuing several years of his incarceration. Firstly, in Wacol's Arthur Gorey Remand Facility, and then the maximum security Sir David Longland Correctional Centre. Confined to a cell 3 metres square, watched by CCTV surveillance 24/7, Abbott wasn't going anywhere, or so they thought. Abbott escaped from SLD in 97, with a Queensland state election just around the corner. Predictably, the Labor opposition had a field day, bucketing the Nationals for allowing it to happen.
Now, his life in solitary was not the best.
And can we say solitary confinement has to be one of the most disgusting ways to treat people in general? Like, I understand the urge to punish the criminal. I understand it completely.
Well, I feel like there should be two different types of solitary confinement. You have solitary confinement for people who are going to cause shit or have shit caused upon them, and the solitary confinement of people who just need to be on their own. Yeah. I'm a person who needs to be on their own. I'll take that one.
And that's fine. Like, if you have to be on your own, well, you should have, you know, a couple of books or something to read. But just the idea of putting someone in a box, turning the light off, having them live in pure darkness for massive stretches of time.
22, 23 hours a day.
If you're a dangerous psychotic prisoner, that has to just make you more dangerous and psychotic.
And that's the argument against it.
So what's the fucking point?
And that's the argument against it.
So yeah, we don't endorse solitary confinement. The Western world in general needs to do so much better with reform. Because
reform,
we just,
not punish.
Yeah, yeah. We just suck at it because we try and turn the prisons into an industry.
As a result of his solitary confinement, Abbott reached out to his friends and family, seeking to get some human connection back into his life. He even went so far as to drop a few hints.
In the lead-up to a surreal night that made international headlines, Brendan Abbott's long-lost love, Jackie Lord, was thrilled to be corresponding with him again. She says, Brendan and I started writing again in 97. We used to write a lot, and he would call every weekend. He was supposed to go to Woodford. That was why he wanted to break out. He said, I'm getting a transfer to Woodford, and I don't want to go there. So if you don't hear from me for a while, don't panic. He kind of even hinted to me that he was going to escape. He said something about someone having organized him passports. I said, what are you talking like this for? You're locked up. He said, yeah, but that can change. And I thought, what is he up to now?
I find that woman's voice absolutely fucking hilarious. Why I was certainly giggling over here. I don't know why. It's probably the only voice that I will condone on this podcast.
You like that?
It's just so ridiculous coming out of you.
I went for middle class, slightly above Bogan.
And you ended up in Bogan.
Do you think I...
You slid down class.
Because when I think Bogan, right, I think like, the back of me.
Spikes.
Yeah, we just had like five fucking kids that we're carrying on with all the time. Now, that's not what I did. I tried to elevate it a little bit.
You were skimming the edge of Bogan.
I skimmed the edge of Bogan, yes. Because I kind of feel like the girlfriend of Brendan Abbott, we'd be borderline Bogan.
We'll see. I don't know.
international listeners, if you don't understand what the term Bogan is, you can replace it with something like redneck, hillbilly.
See the TV show, how's those?
What would the UK call a Bogan or a redneck? Do they have...
They do.
They'd localize it though, wouldn't they? So if I say anything, it's probably going to piss off a section of England. So I should just shut the fuck up.
I know what it is, but I can't fucking remember the word.
Cockney?
No.
Would it be Cockney?
No, Cockneys are not Bogans. You Google it while I do this.
Anyway, UK listeners, let us know on our Facebook page, We Crap in Australia, or shoot us an email through to wecrapinaustralia@gmail.com. We'd love to know. What's a redneck in the UK?
This time, on November 5, 1997, Abbott and four other prisoners use angel wire.
Ooh, angel wire is very cool.
It's a diamond-encrusted wire used to cut through basically anything and which had been smuggled into the prison. To saw through the bars of their cells, they then ran to the perimeter fence. Another accomplice, Brendan Berricon, who was released in September 1997, was waiting for them. While cutting through the fencing, they tripped a sensor. Berricon fired at the patrol.
Jesus.
he had a gun.
Stupid move, though.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think? Like... There's a bunch of patrol cars.
There's a difference between breaking out of prison and shooting at a cop.
Yeah, because that's just going to get everyone killed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a very extreme reaction. But I mean, maybe in that situation, he needed to buy them time to get to the car too. Maybe they, without that distraction, they all would have been fucked over.
Berrigan fired at the patrol vehicle nearby, disabling it. Guards were pinned down by the shots. This gave the escapees long enough time to cut through the fence and climb into Berrigan's car. The escapees later claimed this incident was not planned, that it just happened in a panic, but given Abbott's track record, I can't actually see him giving the gun an okay. He never actually fired the gun when he was robbing banks. Yeah. For all we know, it was never actually loaded.
Yeah. We knew it was loaded because he had ammunition when they caught him the second time.
Yeah, but if it's on the floor, it's not on the gun.
Yeah. But one thing I will say is that, yeah, I don't feel like he would have condoned it because you postulate a very good theory there, Holly, is that, well, he never fired a weapon in any of the robberies.
For which all means, anyone knew, it was a bubble gun.
Which meant that he probably did have a penchant for nonviolence. It was smart enough to know, I think, that if he killed someone, it'd really turn everyone against him.
We have another quote here from news.com.
I eventually made my way to Coolangatta and found the 24-hour motel was no longer open 24 hours. By then, all I was interested in was getting some sleep. There was an upturned lifesaver's boat on Coolangatta Beach. It had drizzled most of the night and was still at it. I crawled under the boat and lay there, dwelling on the hectic past 24 hours or more. I'd had a lot of luck on my side and I just went out like a light, which is Australian slang for going to sleep.
Just dropped to sleep.
Out like a light, mate.
Thought out like a lizard drinking. In the outside world, the politicians were going nuts. News of his escape in 1997 caught on, and as 98 was another election year, the Queensland government was having a field day blaming each other for his escape in true politician style.
Do you believe in the Liberal Party? Do you believe that they can't keep a violent criminal like Brendan Abbott under control? We can, the Labor Party. And then I'm sure the opposite of it was, the Labor Party has not empowered us with enough resources to keep people like Brendan Abbott under control. Vote one, Liberal Party.
And the Nationals was... Are you worried about Brendan Abbott? We've got you covered. We stand for your gun rights.
Nationals. I was just about to say, we'll be able to take him out ourselves if everyone gets a gun. Yeah! Bum, 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 bum. Let's go get us a criminal. I'm sorry, Texans, but You know,
the Nationals are basically you.
Some stereotypes hold true. Yosemite Sam is very accurate, I feel.
And we have another part of the quote from Policy or Politics.
As the 1998 state election campaign got underway, with Abbott still at large, politicians on all sides used the postcard bandit as a poster boy for their respective law and order credentials. Labor ran election advertising on TV featuring the high-profile escapee, and the political parties went to the polls competing on how tough they would get on Brendan Abbott. That year, the fledgling One Nation Party won 25% of the primary vote in Queensland, sending a terrifying chill through all the major parties. Next time, there could be no more mistakes.
So, realistically, we owe Brendan Abbott for the rise of Pauline Hanson.
But was that one of Pauline Hanson's talking points back in the 90s? Like, it was like she had two major talking points that I can
recall. The Chinese are going to take our jobs. They're invading us. I don't know what the other one was.
So, she had 2 points. One was that Aboriginal people should be kicked off welfare, like in their entirety.
Mm-hmm.
Her other talking point were Chinese Australians are coming to destroy the country.
Racism and racism.
Yeah. So, that was the first one. Then she... Interestingly enough, Tony Abbott, who I don't believe is related to Brendan Abbott, Tony Abbott was currently a big player in the Liberal Party. He actually had Pauline Hanson arrested due to an incorrect filing for her political party One Nation. Some have suggested that Pauline Hanson during this era was actually considered one of Australia's first political prisoners in 100 years.
Since 1808.
Yeah, since 1808. So that's all, it's quite interesting. But people who were adults in that era would probably remember her policies better, but I don't quite recall her being like a law and order person. And she never really has been. It's always been like the Muslims are coming to get you, the Christians are coming to get you. Christians are coming. The Christians are our friends. They'll never hurt
Christians
anyone.
Christians will save us, and so will our guns.
You know, it's like the Chinese are coming to get you, and
the Aboriginals are useless. Are stuff money. Like that.
Yeah. That was usually her stick.
Her stick is racism. Pretty much. As a general concept. Yeah.
Oh, and she's a men's rights activist now. I can tell you this on behalf of as an Australian man, I don't need her fucking defending me. Thank you very much.
As a redhead, I don't need her on my side either, so I don't care.
Anyway, we have probably pissed off about 25,000 people now.
But it's actually connected to the story, which is a difference for us. It usually isn't.
True. I usually go on just a rant.
Abbott was recaptured on May 2, 1998 in Darwin. The force managed to track down a post office box used by Abbott on the Gold Coast, and when they opened it, they found a bill for a pager, along with his home address. For those of you who don't know what a pager is, it's a tiny little square of thing you wore on your belt that would just go beep, beep, beep all the time.
Yeah, basically, it'd send through a short message and your phone number so the person would know to call you back.
It's a very rudimentary form of a text message.
Pretty much.
Abbott served 2 years of solitary confinement for this and was released in May 2004 from the solitary confinement, not from jail. He ended up suing the Queensland government for mistreatment in regards to the confinement. Now, he was returned to the general maximum security population in April 2006, having requested medical attention 3 times in 12 months. More than likely, they were threatened suicide attempts, never actually attempted, but I don't know for sure. I'm just postulating here because that tends to be what they do. Abbott has since spent his time in solitary, in and out, suing the government and then being returned to it.
I will periodically emerge to sue you and then return back. In the 16 years since, he has been mostly held in solitary confinement. His cell has been thoroughly searched on an almost daily basis. He has undergone hundreds of cell changes, and his movements have been restricted and logged by prison officers every 15 minutes. He is now 53 years old and has been described by prison guards as a model prisoner. Having committed serious crimes, he deserved to be locked away for a long time, and he was. But after he served 12 years, he became eligible for parole in 2011. Yet his applications for release in 2011, 12, 13 and 14 were all refused by Queensland authorities. He has now spent 16 years in prison, more time than most murderers do. Most of it in solitary confinement, and no doubt the parole board is running out of reasons why he should not be released.
And that's from his lawyer.
Which I would agree with. someone asked me recently, obviously because we've done so much work on true crime in Australia, you know, through this podcast, they said to, like, we were talking about the sentencing in this country, and the person I was talking to was a bit horrified that rape and murder don't really get very high.
You get sentenced to 25, but you only end up serving 10.
You say in some cases with some rapists, they absolutely have been able to manage that.
There are some murderers, however, who will not be released, and we're looking at the nights here. Yep.
And the person I was talking to said, well, what lands you in jail for a long time in Australia? And I said-
pissing off a politician.
Pissing off politicians is a good one, and also money.
Yep.
You're going away for a long time.
White collar crime, not blue collar, white collar.
Yeah, yeah. You steal something, like you embezzle, you can easily find yourself 15 years in prison. Easily. It's disgusting. We have a really backwards way of dealing with crime, because the thing about it is people who can afford to be robbed, generally rich. And if they're rich, then they generally have the side of the law. You know,
they're either lobbyists or they're politicians.
Yeah, exactly.
Abbott attempted to transfer between Queensland and Western Australia, but when Queensland finally wanted to let him go, West Australia said, nah, fuck off, you can keep him. Abbott will be eligible for parole in July 2026, and his sentence will expire on July 2033. If no more charges are laid against him, he will remain on parole in Queensland until July 2040, when he'll be 78 years old. West Australia has since changed its tune, wanting him to serve out his remaining sentence in West Australia instead of in Queensland. This is yet to be decided. However, it is worth noting that they have extra charges they want to lay on him if they get him across the border.
What's the point? Honestly.
You can't get away from us.
So we've got a quote here from the ABC, and then we'll probably... I think we both have some thoughts on this one.
Yeah.
ABC TV's Australia Story in 2003 revealed Abbott had written to his friend, Jackie Dines, saying he was against any hero tag. A lot of misguided people seem to think that I was some sort of hero. I want to state clearly that I regret the way my life has gone, and I don't want it to be glamorized in any shape, manner, or form. And that comes straight from Abbott.
That's not the way folk heroes work, however. You can say no, fuck off as much as you want, but if people want to worship you, they're going to worship you.
Absolutely. Especially because Abbott had made himself... He unfortunately became, I think, a scapegoat for a lot of politicians who are looking for their law and order angle. And, you know, that's... You never want to be on those sort of crosshairs, because that makes you one of the most wanted people in the country when... Mm-hmm. When, yeah, the government is that loudly agitating for your capture, like you're fucked. Like
everybody knows your face. It is only a matter of time until someone dobs you in.
And it's incredible, because in the case of Abbott, he wasn't a dangerous criminal. No. Not in the sense of the people that we've covered, especially around 1980s Australia.
Yeah.
Like he is on the, as far as violent criminals are concerned, he is at the bottom of the fucking pole, yet.
He's a feather touch.
Yet. Because he became the scapegoat for two political campaigns, he became Australia's most wanted man.
Yep.
Because of misinformation that built into a folk legend, he became Australia's most wanted man. You could nearly say that Brendan Abbott is perhaps one of Australia's most unluckiest criminals.
Yep.
Because I think if he'd gone down the route of most of the criminals that we've covered, he could easily had a stealth career of 35 years. And we would talk about the Postcard Bandit in the same way that we talk about Mr. Krull, in the respect that he would have had a long criminal career and then disappeared and we never would have known who he was.
Yep.
It's only for all of that extra attention that he was captured, which is just bad fucking luck.
It's also bad fucking luck that it's his case that got everyone, all the police forces to actually cooperate instead of undercut each other.
Yeah. Yeah. It created unified communication methods between all these different states. And
sailing across the West Australian border, like, now I'm free, turns around, Northern Territory and West Australia police come after him. He's like, what the fuck is this?
But you would never see this these days because, like, you know, even bringing up our example of the Twitter Bandit would have a really cool month and that'd be it.
Yep.
They would be able to knock over five or six banks, maybe, and then they'd be caught, you know, because it's very fucking difficult to evade the authorities these days. Everything around us is monitoring us, is recognizing our faces, is uploading them to databases.
I'd also like to point out the Twitter bandit would probably get a longer career if he spaced out his attacks rather than doing one a week, which is what you seem to be doing.
One of the things that I find very, very funny these days is people are like, government overreach, we don't want the surveillance state. And it's like, we're kind of living in it now. Every single person generally that you encounter on the streets has a mobile phone in their pocket capable of facial recognition and high-definition footage, right? You go to the self-serve at the supermarket that has a camera inside it, takes your face for anti-shoplifting reasons.
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, you've also got the security cameras around the supermarket. You go to the ATM maybe to take out some cash. There's a camera in the ATM. You go over to the pub to have some lunch, or in the case of America, you go to a bar. We also have bars here. We have bars, pubs, clubs.
Bars and pubs are two different things.
Some churches serve beer, I'm sure. It is Australia. You know, you then walk into a club to spend some money, have some lunch, and you're being probably recorded by another five different cameras. And there's also an ATM in the club, which also has a camera in it. I just don't think in that level of surveillance that we live in these days, could you have a career as a bank robber?
Not unless you were really good at disguising your face.
Yeah. I think like, and that's why I bring up the hacker again. Like, it'll be the hacker that fucks around with the facial tech, you know. One of the shows I watched back in the day was Ghost in the Shell, and they had like a bank robber sort of figure and you know, anarchist and someone who was destabilizing everything. And they were hacking into the facial recognition technology. So when it recognized their face, it actually imposed a logo over the top of it. And that person became known as the Smiling Man. I feel like that's where the criminal bank robber will reemerge probably sooner rather than later, and they'll reemerge with, you know, instead of a crowbar and a shotgun, they're going to have a very, you know, good laptop with them.
And their face would just be like a QR code that would link to the Twitter bandit's feed.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I will say, let Tony Abbott out. Sorry.
No, let him out.
I apologize. Keep Tony Abbott, the politician, in. Let Brendan Abbott out.
I want to see what he does next.
He's headed towards 60, right? What could he possibly do? And it's like, if you can't have it both ways. Like, if you let rapists out on the street after 11 years,
mm-hmm.
you can't keep a bank robber in prison for 40 years.
No.
You just can't. Don't, like, people can't justify it.
It's not punishment. It's vindictive retribution.
That's right. And that's where it's wrong. Like, if the only thing keeping I said it again. If the only thing keeping Brendan Abbott in prison is old political enemies, then parole.
Yep, let him out.
Put an ankle monitor on him.
Make it unhackable.
Put him on an ankle monitor for 4 years. He's nearly an old man.
He is an old man. If my calculations are right, he is 59.
Either sentence everyone appropriately or let him out.
Yep.
That's my final thoughts on that. Anything you wanted to add, Holly, before we wrap it up?
No, I inserted all my opinions as you were talking.
Don't forget, keep the conversation going. How do you feel about Brendan Abbott? Should he be left where he is, or should we release him, or should they make a better movie? You let us know. Keep the conversation going. You can find us on Facebook, Weird Crap in Australia. Just type that into the search bar. You can also find us over on Instagram, same name. And we are sitting on Twitter. Our handle is Weird Crap in Oz, AUS.
We might have to make the Twitter bandit handles though.
We may do. Don't forget, of course, you can also reach out to us via email. We prefer, if you do have any interview requests or things like that, you do reach out to us via that email. Just makes it easier. We do get requests every now and again, but sometimes you can get lost in the social media struggle. Shoot us an email through to weirdcrapinaustralia@gmail.com, weirdcrapinaustralia@gmail.com, including any advertising inquiries. If you're a small business and you would actually like to work with us, we've worked with small business in the past and had some success there. Being able to advertise your business should not only be something that's left to the super profitable. It should be something that mum and pop businesses can do as well. So please reach out to us if you have a small business that you would like to promote. We'd love to work with you.
Or if you're doing an Australian historical fiction or an Australian fiction book, we would like to read them and promote them. Absolutely. For you too. Do you That's something we can do.
Do you have a small business? Do you have a charitable organization that you think needs some attention? Let us know, weirdcrapinaustralia@gmail.com. Now, to sell you some shit, don't forget our book, Weird Crap in Australia, Volume 1, is still available in print. You can head to lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com, to grab the physical edition. You can also get that on Kindle. Weird Crap in Australia Volume 2 is coming out in September, so make sure you catch up on Volume 1. Both of those documents and our future books, as we continue to write the Weird Crap in Australia series, are living documents. We are going to be releasing the second edition of Weird Crap in Australia Volume 1 this year as well. So we're going to keep updating those. If you have digital editions, I'll update automatically. If you have paperbacks, don't worry. That just makes them collector's items. So you get to have the first edition. And then one day, of course, we'll probably sign those as well so that you end up with a signed first edition copy.
Yep.
That makes it a collector's item.
Yep.
And then buy the next one. what else have we got, Holly? Don't forget, if you want to get some Weird Crap in Australia merchandise, from beer coasters through to travel mugs and t-shirts, head to our Redbubble store, weirdcrapinaus.redbubble.com. Our in-house artist, Ignacio, has made some amazing designs over the years, so don't forget to go check those out. Get them slapped on a t-shirt, put that t-shirt on your body, and walk around the countryside informing everyone about Weird Crap in Australia.
You can sing "I'm Too Sexy" while you wear it.
Too sexy for this shirt. Too sexy for this shirt. So sexy it hurts. Wow, that's the took one. Us back to the 1990s or 1980s?
90s. Early 90s. I think it was 92.
What was the band's name? Drop Dead Fred? Was that? I think that was their
Right
name.
Said Fred.
Right Said Fred. Drop Dead Fred was the movie.
Yes.
Yeah. Right Said Fred. That's right. Classic. Is that all the stuff I have to say? Oh, and Patreon, actually. Patreon helps to make these episodes possible. Don't forget, if you would like to support us there, for only $5 a month, you can get the mainline episodes, like the one you've just listened to, completely ad-free. It also gets released a day earlier on Patreon, so you can get the content a little bit earlier. We also do a special bonus mini-sode where we discuss the latest news headlines, and those are exclusively released to our Patreon, including exclusive interviews as well. You can go check all of those out on our Patreon site. Just type in Weird Crap in Australia in that search bar. Otherwise, folks, as is customary, we let Holly have the final words. How do you feel about it? Holly, what do you feel about bank robbing in general?
I mean, that wasn't what I was going to say. I finally remembered what the British version of a redneck is.
Oh, actually, yep, go ahead. What was it?
It's a chav.
Yeah, I suppose a chav would be a bit of a redneck, wouldn't they?
Well, they're definitely not upper class.
Yeah, definitely not upper class. Well, there you go. We can never go to the UK because we may be murdered by chavs. Well,
we're only staying in Oz, and we're kind of remaining in this area because the Queenslanders and the Victorians want to kill us.
Yeah, we're just pissing everyone off. That, but that's fine. Hey, you know,
we're Australian. It happens.
Exactly. And on that note, folks, we'll have more Weird Crap in Australia for you next week, but in the meantime, please stay safe in a chaotic world, and we will see you next time. Bye for now.
See ya.
See ya, folks. This has been a production of The Modern Meltdown. For more podcasts just like it, head to themodernmeltdown.net.